CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Judy Dempsey, the Editor-in-Chief of Strategic Europe. She's based in Berlin for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, to comment on the frontline states in the conflict over Ukraine. At the same time, new states in the European Union, and now dealing with a policy paper that Judy introduces in her new column at the Carnegie Endowment Strategic Europe. It's called the Common Foreign and Security Policy, CFSP. It obliges these new members of the EU, relatively speaking, the Central European and Baltic states, to face the fact that a common foreign policy may not oblige all of their individual concerns. I begin, however, with Judy's identifying two events that moved the Central European and Baltic states to the front of the concern for all of the European Union. The first is Nord Stream. Judy, a very good evening to you. Nord Stream 1, and then there was Nord Stream 2. How did that change the outlook for the Central European, that would be Poland, and the Baltic states? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you as ever for having me on your great show. It changed things fundamentally because, on the one hand, the European Union was committed to energy liberalization, energy diversification, but this wasn't happening under this German agreement with the Russian state-owned giant Gazprom. And the close relations between Germany and Russia meant and allowed and gave Russia the chance to forget about these huge transfer energy costs across Ukraine and Poland and just forget about these countries, build a pipeline under the Baltic Sea and send gas for the first time to Germany and then onto Europe and make lots of profits. And this really galvanized the opposition by the Baltic states and Poland to how Germany was acting behind our backs. And it became a big issue. Poland had just joined the European Union in 2004, and along with the Baltic states, it put enormous pressure on the European Union to actually take energy security seriously. This was the bottom line, energy security.
You write that the Baltic states and the Central European states, I'm looking at the different parts of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Slovenia, and then we can include parts of Romania, Hungary. All these states have long, and I mean long, centuries long, suspect that Berlin and Moscow or Berlin and Petersburg act behind their backs. Is that still true, Judy?
Well, you have to differentiate. The Bulgaria and Romania have very different historical experiences because of Turkey and the Turkish Empire. So all of these countries have different historical experiences. Hungary had the Turkish experience, plus the Austrian, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Poles were divided between the Russians, between the Germans, Prussia. I mean, all of them have different individual experiences. There's no one overwhelming factor that says, Germany's at the bottom of this. But what is common to all of them is that they want to be treated honestly, fairly, and with transparency now that they are in the European Union. And the bottom line is that they have suspicions of tie-ups with the Franco-German relationship or the old fading German relationship now with Russia. But what they want is a degree of equality and a degree of transparency, as I say, on how these extraordinarily big and important geostrategic infrastructure deals are carried out.
Many years ago, I can remember the argument made by, it was during the Bush administration and the catastrophe of Iraq and Afghanistan. There was a rhetorical difference made between the new Europeans and the old Europeans, the Eastern Europeans and the Western Europeans. I see now reading your posting that that was a false division, and that the U.S. did not have it right. Has the U.S. figured out now that these European states have different histories and we can't treat the new Europe as cheerleaders for Washington and old Europe as doubters for Washington? It's all mixed up now?
It's sort of all mixed up. I think there are many issues involved in this question. Okay, let's break it down. First of all, most of the Central Europeans and the Baltic states, in fact, all of them, they are deep Atlanticists. They are so pro-NATO. This is absolutely fundamental to their security. And this is part of the Euro-Atlantic structures of being in the EU and NATO at the same time. Now, the West Europeans who depended on the Americans to get them off their feet after 1945, they are, some are ambiguous now about the United States, not so much the security umbrella, but they don't embrace Atlanticism as much as the East Europeans. The Central Europeans embrace Atlanticism because they want to protect their sovereignty, and they weren't allowed to embrace Atlanticism when they were under the communist yoke. The West Europeans got blasé maybe about security. The Americans provided the security. The West Europeans didn't have to pay. And now perhaps it's coming home to roost because of all the issues. But at the end of the day, during the Iraq war, most of the Central Europeans supported the Bush administration, and the West Europeans, particularly led by Belgium, France and Germany, certainly didn't support what Donald Rumsfeld was doing in Iraq.
Now, the second event that has changed the outlook for the Central European and Baltic states is the Russian invasion of Ukraine. How did it change everybody's opinion?
The Russian invasion and the 2014 invasion of Eastern Ukraine, which was sort of it mutated into just a negotiating element to have a ceasefire. The big invasion nearly 2 years ago, it fundamentally changed the constellation of Europe, because the Central Europeans and the Baltic states, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, and the Central Europeans, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia and Poland, they recognized what was at stake. It was the independence of a country, Ukraine. It was the sovereignty of a country, Ukraine. It was the determination of a country, Ukraine, to defend this. And this is what these countries couldn't do when they were under the yoke of communism. And so they rallied behind Ukraine. And not only that, they actually used their political and moral and historical experience and support to lobby the EU institutions and the old, the West European member states to get behind Ukraine and realize that the old structures are over. The old comfortable status quo of nice relations with Russia is over. And essentially, they were saying, we are vindicated. We told you this was going to happen after what happened in Chechnya in the late 1990s, what happened in Georgia in 2007, what happened in Ukraine in 2014, what happened in Belarus in 2020-21, and now what happened in Ukraine. And they're saying to the West Europeans, wake up. We have our narrative of occupation. You have your narrative of freedom, thanks to the United States. Now you've got to listen to ours.
Now we come to the common foreign and security policy, which I think, if I read you correctly, is not embraced by the Central European and Baltic states because they recognize they'll have to make compromises about their sense of security. They'll have to deal with the veto power of Western states. Why is this giving them pause now?
Well, just let's backtrack a little. The CFSP, the Common Foreign and Security Policy, is quite old. 15 or 17 years it's been plodding along. It's been working on consensus, on unanimity, crisis management teams here, police training teams there, a few soldiers sent here and there. It hasn't been totally effective. It hasn't been totally ineffective. But one thing is, it hasn't been super efficient because there isn't a really beefed up defense and security and intelligence policy inside the EU. Now, given that what has happened in Ukraine and the appalling relations with Russia, given what's happening in the Middle East, and also given the fact that enlargement is going to expand, more countries will join, maybe 30, down the road, the EU has to become more efficient, more effective. And what they want to do is to use the foreign policy instruments to get rid of the unanimity and instead have something called qualified majority voting, which means that no one country can veto and stop a decision. And so this paper, this Franco-German paper, suggesting that there must be a drop of the veto, there must be maybe two-thirds who vote yes will see a decision through, and there'll be more integrated, maybe a slow pace for the non-Eurozone countries, faster integration for the Eurozone countries. But essentially, the countries of Central Europe and the Baltics, they're hesitant about it. Some of them are opposed about it. Why? Because the fact that they are in the EU, they have a voting power. They have a veto. And do they want to drop this and sort of be beholden to the bigger member states, who no doubt will actually call the shots when it comes to big foreign policy decisions?
You observe this will give more sovereignty, more weight to Brussels. Is that a part of the discussion leading up to the parliamentary election scheduled this spring? Are the members of the parliament now speaking out loud about how they want more foreign policy, more policy to do with Russia decided in Brussels and not by unanimity?
No, this is far too technical for citizens' votes when it comes to the European Parliament elections in June. The issues being portrayed now to the citizens of Europe, the 450 million citizens of Europe, how to deal with climate change, how to deal with energy security, how to make Europe accessible. But bringing in the whole voting issue, it's too opaque, it's too complex. No, the EU Parliament campaign slogans are trying to make the EU accessible. I'm not so sure it's entirely successful, but at the end of the day, this is about the political ideological composition of the European Parliament, which will have an influence on the future direction of the European Union's foreign policy.
Are the Central European states and the Baltic states, are they looking beyond Ukraine afterwards? Are they imagining what their needs will be with a frontier that is going to be drawn chiefly through them?
They don't want a frontier to be drawn, and that's the point. They don't want a cordon sanitaire like they were part of the frontier during the Cold War, the East and the West. They don't want Ukraine or Belarus or Moldova or Georgia to be the new frontier. These countries, the Baltic states and Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, they want these countries to be part of Europe. And they don't want to use them to protect the current EU members. They want them integrated. And so they're campaigning very, very hard to bring all of these countries much, much closer to Europe in order to weaken the hold of Russia and its militarist ambitions to try to claw back some of its influence in these regions.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, who's guiding me to understand how to anticipate the parliamentary elections in the European Union coming this spring, but also at the same time, how the war in Ukraine is affecting the outlook, the vision for the different European states. We're going to turn to an issue that is not life or death, but then again is vital to the politics of all these states, and that is the old-fashioned farm lobby in the U.S. I don't know if it has a single name in Europe. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.